From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for May 3rd, 2024. Checking the calendar, this weekend the Brewers are in Chicago with the Cubs and ex-manager Craig Counsell. The Bucks finished a disappointing season. This wait till next year stuff is getting pretty old. You can celebrate Kentucky Derby weekend at the St. Kate Hotel with mint juleps and hats and stuff. And every Mexican restaurant in town is celebrating Cinco de Mayo. Just picking out one stop, Third Street Tavern hosts their tacos and margarita crawl this Saturday. Okay, Emily King is a 30-year-old teacher and mom in San Jose, California. In planning a first birthday party for her baby girl, she accidentally invited all 487 contacts on her cell phone. I think she's got to move the party to Chuck E. Cheese. That'll hold down the crowd. A man in Philly is missing his emotional support animal, Wally, an 8-foot-long alligator. Wally went almost everywhere with his owner, except to one time when they weren't allowed in the Philadelphia Phillies baseball game. Go figure. But Wally disappeared recently while on vacation somewhere in Georgia. The owner thinks Wally was set free by animal rights activists who misunderstood their relationship. A man and his alligator, how is that possible? A Japanese version of the mafia is the Yakuza. Well, a Yakuza lieutenant was arrested for stealing 25 Pokemon cards. He's going to do time for stealing Pokemon cards. Can you imagine a fellow inmate asking him, well, what are you in for? And our headline of the week, a Scarborough, New York woman wants answers after being told by authorities she's dead. Excuse me? On the podcast today, we have Art Rothschild, John Sandstrom, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Titting.
Well, thanks, Max, and very much not dead. The markets this week, a pretty strong run for the NASDAQ, up 1.4%, 228 points this week, closing at 16,156. The S&P 500 up 28 points, that's a 0.5%, up closing at the bell on Friday at 51,28. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 436 points for the week after a 450-point day on Friday, turning it positive, plus 1.1% on the week, finishing at 38,676 for the year. NASDAQ now up 7.8, the S&P up 7.9, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average still up 3.2%, including dividends. You know, John, I think Friday really encapsulates the week for us, and maybe not particularly because of any great news. It seems that at least for much of, you know, this Fed cycle, it's more been the case again of bad news is good news.
Yeah, and me and you were talking about this earlier. It's been kind of the trend the past few years is the bad news is good news or the good news is bad news. Mainly talk about today the jobs numbers coming in way lower than expected, 175,000 versus the 240,000. And I mean, the markets are interpreting that jobs report as, you know, a potential sign that the economy is beginning to slow down a bit, which would potentially lead to the interest rate cuts that everybody's kind of looking for. But I mean, tying this into kind of how our firm invests in our strategy and what we preach to all of the clients. I mean, look at last month. The jobs report came in, and it was 41% higher than what was expected, and the market got crushed for 2 days. And then in this cycle, this past two or three years, it seems like on any given day, any economic indicator can come out, and you don't know what it's going to be, and it's going to sway the market significantly one way or the other. And that's kind of why we preach get a plan, you allocate correctly based off of what risks you want to take and your time horizon, and you play the long term because you're not going to be able to know what's going to happen on a day-to-day basis.
Well, and of course, long term, it's all about earnings and interest rates, and I think the challenge, of course, is that the interest rate piece right now seems to be the piece that's more in focus, and when you talk about the inflationary pressures that are out there, and you talk about the role that the jobs report might have in kind of informing the Fed on where we are economically. Well, the challenge, of course, is that we had a Fed meeting this week, and, you know, they seem to be suggesting that they haven't made the progress they were hoping for. And Art, I know that's something that we pay quite a bit of attention to is what the Fed is saying. You know, I think more news this week that potentially there's just more to watch if not action.
Yeah, it's part of the same pattern. As John pointed out, bad news being good news for the market if you're looking for the Fed to lower interest rates to stimulate a moribund economy. Well, we don't have that. This bad news wasn't all that bad over long periods of time. Good news is always good news. And so what happened this week is, you know, in anticipation of what the Fed may or may not say, because everyone knew they weren't going to do anything, the market went down a little, and then it came back up after he said what everybody expected him to say. And then the icing on the cake, of course, this week was, oh, a few less people, you know, are getting jobs. But the job numbers are still spectacular. This economy is still solid. There's absolutely no reason, and that's what the Fed's saying. They're focused more on, yeah, eventually they may have to lower rates, but I don't want to wish for that. You know, a strong economy, this could be something we're going to be doing week after week, month after month. We just got through earnings season, you know, as you're going to talk about in a few minutes, I'm sure, and things are pretty good. But enough of this already. You know, let's get on with the rest of, you know, why we're investing, as John pointed out. We invest for the long haul. What may or may not have been anticipated by speculators is totally irrelevant in the long-term scheme of things. So I think it was a pretty good week.
Art, and if I may, just to add some numbers to help illustrate what you're talking about. So it isn't that bad, the numbers. The unemployment rate went up to 3.9%. The average since 1948 is 5.7% unemployment. Yeah. So, you know, 3.9 is, as you say, pretty healthy. The numbers, as John said, were low as far as expectations were concerned for how many jobs were added in April. But it's the economy, U.S. employers have been adding jobs for 40 months in a row without cessation. So that's impressive. But on the other hand, if you look kind of longer term, some of the numbers are showing that the economy is slowing down, especially on the jobs front. The number of job openings, we got those this week. They were the lowest that we've seen in 3 years. The number of people who are voluntarily quitting their jobs, meaning that they feel good enough about their prospects of getting another job, that was the lowest in 3 years. The numbers in today's jobs report showed it's called the U6 rate. It's considered the underemployment rate. That's the highest it's been in 2.5 years. It's been higher than it was before the pandemic for 5 months in a row. And a number that I look at is the number of people getting hired for temporary help services. And that's traditionally been seen as sort of a harbinger of where hiring is going, the directions things are going in. That's been below the pre-pandemic number for 9 months in a row, and it's the lowest it's been in 3.5 years.
And Joel, I think all of that kind of speaks to the fact that the Fed is seeing progress, that the current rate environment we're in, earlier I said it's all about earnings and interest rates, well, the current rate environment we're in is not accommodative, and the Fed has been clear that while they probably don't need to raise rates much more, it is a restrictive rate environment relative to the broader economy. It also probably isn't time to cut yet. And so those counting on that as kind of the backdrop for why we're investing in the stock market, lower rates tend to speak to higher stock prices today because you don't have to discount future earnings as much. Well, there's that earnings part of the equation now coming in. And, you know, we're a good chunk of the way through, 80% of the way through S&P 500 earnings now, first quarter. 50% of the earnings came out in the last 2 weeks. And Art, it's a sign that we're mostly on track with expectations. We've seen earnings growth. We've seen kind of this driving force historically of stock market appreciation doing exactly what we would have hoped. And then you get, well, there's still concerns out there. You know, one of the big ones that gets thrown around is election. And what's that going to mean for my investments? What's that going to mean for corporations, for my tax bill? You know, these are all reasonable questions. But at the end of the day, maybe the election doesn't have as much of an impact on the near term as what many might want to believe.
Yeah, two of my favorite fears to be discussed this time of year are sell in May and go away. And oh, me, oh, my, we're going to have an election in the fall. And how's that going to affect the markets. And we have to be ready to address those, you know, concerns with respect to our clients. We have to be able to understand what the facts are. And one of the facts that you put on this summary, and you put a lot of time and effort into putting these out every week, since the pre-COVID peak, the S&P 500 is up 51.4%. That's 4 years. I mean, it's a tremendous number. And so we're back on track, and I think we're going to continue to be moving forward as long as this economy continues to expand. But going back to the concerns you just raised, the market goes up regardless of whether it's an election year or not. We're talking about how much better the market tends to do during election years. And it does tend to do better in election years. And so it may go down a little before the election in anticipation of whoever might win or lose, but thereafter we typically have a year-end rally, you know, in election years. I think we've experienced that specifically. The sell in May and go away thing, it's the same thing. You know, the stock market does better up in, you know, through April, starting in maybe November, but it still makes money the rest of the year, and we've had some significant rallies in those time periods. So we're not going to speculate. We're going to help our clients navigate. And when we use managers, active managers, which we believe strongly in, they're going to help insulate our clients, you know, somewhat from the ups and downs. And when you throw in bonds, you know, as John mentioned, to have a balanced portfolio, we just want to have a smooth enough ride that we can get from one point to another without being bothered too much by these worries.
You know, I know we've talked about and written about seasonality in the past and some of the old adages of, you know, whether it's sell in May or whether it's the Santa Claus rally. You know, there's all these kind of market tools that we've used to say, well, is this a better time or a worse time to invest? And what's funny about a lot of those tools is that those patterns tend to emerge. They have historically held true. And then you get investors that maybe front run the idea, right? They go, well, if everybody else is going to sell in May, I'm going to buy up to that, and then I'm going to sell. Or I'm going to be the buyer in May when everybody else is selling. And it tends to then invert that relationship a little bit, just from a very technical perspective. And so I think the one thing you don't want to be do is be the one left holding the bag, or even worse, to your point, be the one that's out of the market when everybody else is buying. And if the general direction for stocks, on average, you get more up days than down days, if the general direction is up, well, I think you want to be in the market, and it speaks to our inability broadly to time, because at the end of the day, more often than not, you're going to be wrong if you're selling. You're going to be right if you're buying. I think the other challenge we face on the election front is that investors generally care more about whether you make money than they do about who the president is. They care more about how does the American consumer feel, are they spending or aren't they, than they do about who you've elected for Senate or for Congress or any of those things. And so I think as we look at what's really the long-term risks to stocks, it gets back to earnings and interest rates, and it's a lot less about, well, are the Democrats or Republicans going to win? Don't get me wrong. Those things certainly matter. And depending on your political leanings, I think you can look at where we are as a country and go, well, I'd like to see this or that happen. But when you talk about a free market in which the U.S. economy is the largest free market in the world, the largest market in the world as a whole, and where we do one thing better than any other country on earth, and that is spend money, I think the consumer is ultimately what matters. And so it gets back to the, well, bad news is good news, maybe short term, but long term, we want the good news. We want the strong economic growth. And Joel, we got some more economic news this week, maybe not all positive, but signs that the economy certainly is on a strong enough footing. And in particular, you know, things like manufacturing and service sector ISM numbers that show some weakness, but not, you know, falling off a cliff.
Right, Kyle. Yeah, the ISM, the Institute for Supply Management, came out with two reports this week, one on manufacturing and the other one on the service industry. Both of them are showing those industries are contracting. For the first time in 16 months, the service industry reports that it's not expanding. It's actually shrinking a little. And the manufacturing report showed that manufacturing has gone down for the 17th time in 18 months. So that's been a weak spot for a while. And we also got factory order numbers from the Commerce Department, and those too were weak, showing only a year-to-year rise of 0.7% in manufacturing orders. So those are elements. But again, it's slowing down, but there are still signs of hope in there. The ISM Manufacturing Index actually looked at, beyond the headline at some of the other numbers and said that they're actually seeing early stages of recovery that are coming forth in the manufacturing sector. The service sector is a pretty strong, robust part of the economy anyway. So, we'll see in future months what's going on. But that one month pause, is concerning maybe. But maybe it's just a sign that we're slowing down a little.
Well, and on the manufacturing front, we had construction spending numbers that were less than favorable, but at least on the factory spending, right, on the kind of build out of our ability to manufacture, some positive signs that maybe the reshoring of manufacturing or the bringing back to the North America portion of the world is getting some traction.
That's right. We've been seeing that for months now, where especially if you're looking on a year-to-year basis, the amount of money that's being invested in factory construction is going up. It's up 26% from where it was a year ago. And so that's good thing. That's going to help the productivity of factories, you got to think. That's going to provide jobs in the construction industry, at least until the projects are over. And maybe it will help shore up the jobs within those manufacturers after the construction is complete.
And then, I think the other one that has continued to weigh is just home prices in general, and the fact that we are still seeing pretty meaningfully significant price increases on housing. I think in large part, maybe, Joel, due to some inventory shortages that continue to be part of the problem.
That's part of the problem, but it's interesting because the latest numbers we have on that are from the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Home Price Index, and their data lags. So this was only from February. But one of the things that they said was that housing prices have been going up and reaching near all-time highs, in part because of demand. And the demand is going up in part because people are anticipating that the Fed's going to be cutting interest rates right away. So that's from February. And we know now, 2 months later, that they're not cutting interest rates right away. So we'll see what effect that has on demand and what effect that has on prices.
Well, as always, a week in which the Fed spoke on Wednesday, in which we got some pretty meaningful employment data, really the cap on what's been a decent stretch recently for stocks. I think, we're moving our way out of earnings season now. Got a few weeks left of kind of meaningful reports, and then going to be set adrift for a little while. And so I think as you kind of navigate what maybe the next 6 weeks or so look like as we get through the rest of May and June, there's plenty of questions that are going to float out there. There's plenty of things that are going to push markets around. But I think this is an important time to remember that it's earnings and interest rates long term that drive direction, that interest rates appear, if nothing else, stable for a while now. And the earnings piece seems to have some growth potential going forward.
And we're still going to have a podcast all the way through September, right?
We'll have plenty to talk about, I suspect, but it probably won't be earnings for a little while now that we've mostly made its way to the end. As always, we enjoy doing the show for you. We look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.